Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, March 12, 2021. Here are some of your headlines. New York's two Democratic senators, Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, and a number of Democratic members of the House, now calling for Governor Andrew Cuomo, also a Democrat, to resign as he faces more allegations of sexual harassment. Governor says that he is staying in office, again denying he did anything inappropriate, and says that politicians who do not know the facts but form conclusions are reckless and dangerous. And today, a seventh woman has come forward accusing the governor of sexual harassment. President Joe Biden celebrating the new $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief law with Democratic senators and House members in the White House Rose Garden, and talking about the implementation phase of so much money, saying it's critical to demonstrate that government can function. President Biden also taking part in his first World Leaders Summit, meeting virtually with the prime ministers of India, Japan, and Australia, an alliance known as the Quad. And the Minneapolis City Council approves a $27 million settlement for the family of George Floyd. This week, jury selection began in the trial of the ex-police officer accused of killing George Floyd in 2020, with a knee on his neck for nearly 9 minutes. A joint statement Friday afternoon from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, both Democrats from New York. It reads, "Confronting and overcoming the COVID crisis requires sure and steady leadership. We commend the brave actions of the individuals who have come forward with serious allegations of abuse and misconduct. Due to the multiple credible sexual harassment and misconduct allegations, it is clear that Governor Cuomo has lost the confidence of his governing partners and the people of New York. Governor Cuomo should resign." A similar message from several House members from New York who are Democrats, from the progressive Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to the veteran Jerry Nadler. Congresswoman Cortez putting out a joint statement with new progressive member Jamal Bowman that reads, "As members of the New York delegation to the House, we believe these women, we believe the reporting, we believe the Attorney General, and we believe 55 members of the New York State Legislature, including the State Senate Majority Leader, who have concluded that Governor Cuomo can no longer effectively lead in the face of so many challenges." Governor Cuomo held a teleconference initially to discuss the coronavirus response, but he also addressed this issue.
"As I have said before, and I firmly believe, and my administration has always represented, women have a right to come forward and be heard, and I encourage that fully. But I also want to be clear, there is still a question of the truth. I did not do what has been alleged, period. I won't speculate about people's possible motives, but I can tell you, as a former attorney general who's gone through this situation many times, there are often many motivations for making an allegation. And that is why you need to know the facts before you make a decision. There are now two reviews underway. No one wants them to happen more quickly and more thoroughly than I do. Let them do it. I'm not going to argue this issue in the press. That is not how it is done. That is not the way it should be done. Serious allegations should be weighed seriously, right? That's why they are called serious. As I've told New Yorkers many times, there are facts and then there are opinions. And I've always separated the two. When I do briefings, I put out the facts and then I offer my opinions. But they are two different concepts. Politicians who don't know a single fact, but yet form a conclusion and an opinion, are, in my opinion, reckless and dangerous. The people of New York should not have confidence in a politician who takes a position without knowing any facts or substance. That, my friends, is politics at its worst. Politicians take positions for all sorts of reasons, including political expediency and bowing to pressure. But people know the difference between playing politics, bowing to cancel culture, and the truth. People know the difference between playing politics, bowing to cancel culture, and the truth. Let the review proceed. I'm not going to resign. I was not elected by the politicians. I was elected by the people. Part of this is that I am not part of the political club. And you know what? I'm proud of it.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on a teleconference with reporters today. A number of those reporters on the call tried to get him to clarify what relationships he might have thought he had with the women who are now accusing him.
The next question is from David Evans of ABC Channel 7. Your line is open.
Hey, Governor, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Dave.
Hey, Governor, I wanted to ask along the same line of question that Andrew asked just a second ago, and forgive me here for being a little blunt, but I think the question that a lot of us have is, was there some kind of a consensual romantic relationship with any of these women that you understood?
Yeah, look. Go ahead. Dave, my statement could not be clearer, I think. I never harassed anyone. I never assaulted anyone. I never abused anyone. To the extent you get these people who say, well, he took a picture with me and I was uncomfortable, I apologized for that. And I'm sure, look, I took thousands of pictures. I'm sure you can do this all day long. When we take these pictures, we take them in public, Dave. There's a photographer there. It's not like they're done in secret. They literally are being photographed. I mean, I am in crowds of hundreds of people when we're taking these pictures. They stand on receiving lines for a long time to take the picture. But what is being alleged simply did not happen. And that's why you have to wait to get the facts. I'm not going to do it in the press. It's not the way it should be done. It doesn't respect anybody's rights.
Governor Andrew Cuomo on a teleconference. As mentioned, a former State House reporter in Albany, New York, Jessica Bakeman, is now the seventh woman to accuse the governor of sexual harassment, adding to the growing pile of allegations against him. She tells New York Magazine that Andrew Cuomo put his hands on my arms, my shoulders, the small of my back, my waist, throughout her time as a reporter. This is Washington Today. And now to the coronavirus pandemic response. President Joe Biden in the White House Rose Garden today, joined by fellow Democratic leaders in Congress, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer among them. A follow-up to his primetime address Thursday night, during which he directed states to make all adult Americans eligible to receive vaccines no later than May 1st. And he said the country may be able to mark our independence from this virus by the 4th of July. Today was all about the $1.9 trillion bill he just signed into law, providing $1,400 direct payments to millions of Americans, aid to state and local governments, money for vaccines and opening schools, and much more.
In the coming weeks, Jill and I and Kamala and Doug and our cabinet, with all of you, members of Congress, we're going to be traveling the country to speak directly to the American people about how this law is going to make a real difference in their lives and how help is here for them. Almost every single aspect would be significant, if you took this bill and broke it into all the pieces, every one of those pieces standing alone would be viewed as a significant accomplishment. But it's all the work you've done for years to try to get us there. This law is not the end of our efforts, though. I view it as only beginning. As we look, one of the things that I've been most worried about, and I think you all have too, especially those of us that have been around for 100 years like me, is you've watched people lose confidence in government. Just lose confidence in that we tell the truth. That's why when I announced, I quoted Franklin Roosevelt. He said, I'll give it to you straight from the shoulder. The American people can handle anything if you tell them the truth. And they really can. Just give it straight from the shoulder. And when we do something right, we're going to make a case for it. And when I make a mistake, I'm going to own up to it and say it was me. I made a mistake. And I said last night, this is not over. Conditions can change. We're not finished yet. Conditions can change. The scientists have warned us about new variants of this virus. And the devil is in the details of implementing this legislation. I know from experience when the president turned to me like I haven't done to the vice president yet and said, take care of it. You take care of implementing the plan. But she could do it. But I remember being given the dubious distinction of having to implement the Recovery Act back in when we came into office, Barack and I. I spent literally 4 or 5 hours a day for 6 months. I talked to over 160 mayors, probably more than 2 or 3 times. Every governor save one who was looking at from Alaska to Russia, and making sure that we're in a situation where we talk to everybody. But it takes, the devil's in the details. It's one thing to pass the American Rescue Plan. It's going to be another thing to implement it. It's going to require fastidious oversight to make sure there's no waste or fraud, and the law does what it's designed to do. And I mean it. We have to get this right. Details matter.
President Joe Biden in the White House Rose Garden, along with the Vice President Kamala Harris and Democratic leaders from Congress. Associated Press trying to put the cost of the aid bill into context writes, to pay out his coronavirus relief package, President Joe Biden must spend an average of $3.7 billion every day for the rest of this year. That's $43,000 every second of every day until midnight chimes on 2022, according to the Congressional Budget Office. President Biden talking about his speech to the nation Thursday night. There was one name he did not say. And today, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki was asked why.
This was a speech about the anniversary, the last year since the pandemic began. Of course, he spent a lot of time touting the success of vaccines, yet there was no mention of the president under whose administration these vaccines were developed. Does former President Trump not deserve any credit on vaccines?
Well, the president himself and many people in our administration have conveyed that making the progress that was made, and we've said this publicly, that was made on these vaccines was a Herculean, incredible effort by science and by medical experts. And certainly we have applauded that in the past, and we are happy to applaud that again. But I would say there is a clear difference, and there are clear steps that have been taken since the president took office that have put us in a trajectory that we were not on when he was inaugurated. And leadership starts at the top. It includes mask wearing. It includes acknowledging there's a pandemic. It includes getting a vaccine in public. But even more importantly than that, it includes putting in place an operational process that can ensure that we have enough vaccines to vaccinate Americans, enough vaccinators, enough vaccine locations. None of that was in place when the president took office.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki at Friday afternoon's briefing at the White House. Friday morning on Fox News, the House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy asked for his reaction to President Biden's primetime address Thursday, and Congressman McCarthy talking about the role of former President Trump in the vaccines and also that $1.9 trillion bill just signed into law.
He said that by May 1st, every adult who wants a shot should be able to register to get one. Doesn't mean they can get it by May 1st, but register. And he's opening it up. He's going to make it possible for dentists to give it and paramedics and veterinarians. And we were talking to Geraldo about that about an hour ago, and I joked, I don't know about a veterinarian, but because I've never gotten a shot from a vet. But if that's the listen, they give good shots. I was joking, obviously. But if that is how we reopen our economy, by trying to flood the zone with as many shots as possible, people should roll up their sleeves and get the shot, right?
Yes, they should. But how is he able to provide that shot? Operation Warp Speed. He also said when he got into office that they didn't have the vaccine until he came in, even though he was already vaccinated. Let's give credit where credit is due, because it is the American ingenuity that came together, that we had a virus hit us from China, that we came together and made vaccines. Now there's three out there that's already approved. So we're producing more than 2 million a day into people's arms. I say every American that wants the vaccine should get it. But also, every American should be able to go back to work, back to school, and back to health. The other thing that he's going to do, he's going to sign a bill that's going to cost every family of four $22,000. And the thing he's not telling you is what's in this bill. Let me just point out three things what your hardworking taxpayers' money's going for. You are now going to provide bonuses up to $25,000 to government employees and bureaucrats. And if you're not part of the swamp, you get nothing. You are now, your money's going to pay for illegal immigrants' health care. Your money also is being sent to San Francisco City, where your money will be spent giving alcohol and marijuana to the homeless. That is what that bill is doing. And two-thirds of the money for the schools don't even come forward to 2023. And there's $1 trillion still sitting there from the five bills we've already passed. This is a waste of money. Less than 9% is going to COVID. This is a payoff to Pelosi's political friends.
The House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, on Fox and Friends Friday morning. The White House COVID-19 response team giving an update today on what it's going to take to reach President Biden's goals of having vaccines available to all adults in the U.S. by May 1st, and those family gatherings again by the 4th of July, including a vaccine locator tool of a website and a call center. Vaccine delivery up to 700 additional community health centers reaching underserved communities, and announced today another federally supported mass vaccination site opening in Detroit, bringing the total FEMA sites so far across the country to 19. More from today's briefing, White House COVID-19 Response Team Coordinator Jeff Zients and the CDC Director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky.
Next question will go to Caitlin Collins at CNN.
Thanks very much. I have two questions, one super quick. One is, how many people do you actually want to see vaccinated by July 4th in order to meet that goal of having those small gatherings that the president was talking about? And secondly, I think this is probably best for Jeff, but y'all have said we'll have enough vaccine for everyone by the end of May, not that everyone will get it by then. But if we're looking at these numbers, it looks like Moderna will have 200 million by then, Pfizer 200 million, and Johnson & Johnson 20 million. So that's enough, based on my math, for about 220 million people. So where are those other vaccines coming from in order to have enough for all eligible Americans by the end of May?
So Caitlin, I think your 20 million is the figure that Johnson & Johnson has talked about in terms of their cumulative doses by the end of this month. The work that we did working with Johnson & Johnson and Merck to accelerate their manufacturing process, particularly the fill-finish piece, which is relevant in this time frame, has it so that Johnson & Johnson is now delivering at or near its 100 million by the end of May. So if you take the 200 million doses by the end of May of Moderna, plus the 200 million doses of Pfizer, plus the at or near 100 million completion of the Johnson & Johnson first contract, that is more than enough supply to vaccinate, vaccine supply to vaccinate all adult Americans by the end of May. Now we need to ramp up the number of vaccinators, as we've been talking about, and the number of places where Americans can get vaccinated, so that when all adults or Americans are eligible on May 1st, we can accelerate and move very quickly to get as many Americans vaccinated as soon as possible.
Maybe I'll just address the first question, and that is, we're not looking at a single metric of a fraction of people vaccinated in a vacuum. We're looking at it in the context of what's going on with the pandemic as well. So I don't think we can put a single metric on that, as well as what's happening in what science has emerged with regard to vaccinated people. So it's hard to put a metric on a single number.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky, head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and White House COVID-19 Response Team Coordinator Jeff Zients, part of today's virtual briefing. The CDC says the U.S. has now passed 100 million vaccine doses administered. About 35 million have been fully vaccinated. About 65 million have received at least one dose. And the White House says that it plans to have the U.S. hold on to millions of doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is still in phase three trials, does not have FDA authorization for emergency use. But the pharmaceutical company wants to ship some vaccines to Europe, which has already given approval for use of their vaccine. At the same time, some concerns about the AstraZeneca vaccine causing some blood clots. World Health Organization says it's studying it, but there's no reason to stop using the vaccine. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is the WHO Director General.
As countries roll out COVID-19 vaccines, WHO is continuing to keep a close eye on their safety. WHO is aware that some countries have suspended the use of AstraZeneca vaccines based on reports of blood clots in some people who received doses of the vaccine from two batches. This measure was taken as a precaution while a full investigation is finalized. It's important to note that the European Medicines Agency has said there is no indication of a link between the vaccine and blood clots, and that the vaccine can continue to be used while its investigation is ongoing. WHO's Global Advisory Committee on Vaccine Safety systematically reviews safety signals and is carefully assessing the current reports on the AstraZeneca vaccine. As soon as WHO has gained a full understanding of these events, the findings and any changes to our current recommendations will be communicated immediately to the public.
Dr. Tedros, head of the World Health Organization, during a briefing in Geneva. Washington Today continues in a minute. And welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. The Biden administration says it's ending a Trump-era agreement that it said discouraged sponsors of unaccompanied migrant children, like parents or relatives, to come forward due to fear their information would be shared with immigration enforcement agencies. There has been an increase of unaccompanied minors arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border. Federal prosecutors requesting a 60-day delay in a series of cases related to the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, as the Justice Department says it's expecting to charge at least 100 more people on top of the 300 already facing charges. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance says he's not going to run for a fourth term, plans to leave office at the end of the year. He has been investigating former President Donald Trump's finances for possible wrongdoing. And the first U.S. House retirement of the new election cycle. Five-term Democrat Ann Kirkpatrick of Arizona says she won't run in 2022. From NBC News, President Joe Biden taking part in the first leaders' summit of the informal international alliance known as the Quad as his administration steps up efforts to deal with China's growing influence. The group, which also includes India, Japan, and Australia, is meeting virtually due to the coronavirus restrictions. President Biden was at the White House.
The Quad group was created in the wake of, as everyone just saw on that short film, in the wake of a crisis under my predecessor, George W. Bush, on the 2004 tsunami. I remember later, Mr. Prime Minister in Japan, going and visiting that the aftermath of that. It was devastating that you all went through. And for the first time, we're convening this group at a leader level. And I want to thank my counterparts for joining me today, Prime Minister Morrison and Modi and Suga. It's good to have you all. Like I said, I wish we were doing this together. It's also the first multilateral summit that I've had the opportunity to host as president. And on this moment, it's a purpose that I think we all are concerned about. A free and open Indo-Pacific is essential to each of our futures, our countries. The United States is committed to working with you, our partners, and all our allies in the region to achieve stability.
President Biden at the White House speaking to the other leaders of the Quad. Officially, it's the Quadrennial Security Dialogue. Other topics at the summit include climate change and coronavirus vaccines and technology. And as mentioned, China, although the NBC News article on this says that each country has been at pains to make clear this is not an anti-Beijing club. We found out this week that senior U.S. officials will be meeting their Chinese counterparts in Alaska next week. And we got a preview today at the White House from National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
Just to follow to next week's meeting with representatives from China, do you think that tariffs and export controls targeting China will be part of the talks? And what does China need to do for the U.S. to dial back on tariffs and export controls?
I don't expect that, for example, the phase one trade deal is going to be a major topic of conversation next week. This is our effort to communicate clearly to the Chinese government how the United States intends to proceed at a strategic level, what we believe our fundamental interests and values are, and what our concerns with their activities are, whether it's on Hong Kong or Xinjiang or in the Taiwan Strait, or frankly, the issues that we heard today from our Quad partners, their coercion of Australia, their harassment around the Senkaku Islands, their aggression on the border with India. So this will stay more in that zone than get into the details of questions around tariffs or export controls. But we will communicate that the United States is going to take steps in terms of what we do on technology to ensure that our technology is not being used in ways that are inimical to our values or adverse to our security. We will communicate that message at a broad level. But in terms of the details of these issues, we have more work to do with our allies and partners to come up with a common approach, a joint approach, before we go sit down point by point with the Chinese government on these issues. We will also want to bring other key representatives, senior economic representatives of the Biden administration, into those conversations at the point in time when they're appropriate to occur.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan in the White House briefing room. Today, the Chinese Foreign Ministry criticized the Biden administration over new restrictions on 5G technology from Chinese telecom giant Huawei. A spokesman saying the U.S. should stop the suppression on Chinese companies immediately and treat Chinese companies in a fair, just, and non-discriminatory manner. And they added it shows the U.S. isn't a reliable country that is to be trusted. On Wall Street today, the Dow was up 293, NASDAQ down 78, S&P up 4. Senator Marco Rubio has become the first prominent Republican to support Amazon workers in Alabama who are trying to form a union. Senator Rubio wrote in a USA Today op-ed, "The Silicon Valley titan uses anti-competitive strategies to crush small businesses, bans conservative books, and blocks traditional charities from participating in its Amazon Smile program." Not surprisingly, it has also bowed to China's censorship demands. The Minneapolis, Minnesota City Council today approved a $27 million civil settlement with the family of George Floyd, the black man who died in May of 2020 under the knee of former police officer Derek Chauvin, who's now on trial for murder. At a news conference in Minneapolis, one of the lawyers for the George Floyd family, Chris Stewart.
The number today changes evaluations and civil rights for a black person when they die. Because what you don't know is the rigged game that we always have to play when we take one of these cases. Because African Americans are not valued high when they are murdered by law enforcement in these cases. And we are changing that precedent. Because as we told you when we filed this lawsuit 6-7 months ago, we are here to support the actual understanding that Black Lives Matter, but you will start understanding that Black value matters. And what happens is that trickles down to decisions in the communities across this country. When there's a city council or a mayor deciding, oh, should we get rid of no-knock warrants? Should we get rid of chokeholds? Do we want to change these policies? They have 27 million reasons now why they should. And that will make decisions happen.
Joining attorney Chris Stewart at today's news conference, the Minneapolis mayor, Jacob Frey.
And amid unprecedented loss, amid unprecedented pain, we now have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to truly effectuate change. Change that has eluded policymakers, activists, advocates, community members for far too long. Some of those laws and policies on our books today, yes, they were built and put into place with good intention, but the passage of time has caused them to be calcified. It's caused them to be kept in place at times by cynical politics. And as a result, the carefully built trust over time has been lost, has been injured. Lives have been indeed cut short. And our city is so grateful to the Floyd family for their warm embrace of meaningful and overdue arbitration reform and their commitment to work towards justice and peace and safety at 38th and Chicago.
Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey at a news conference in his city. The $27 million civil settlement announced today with the Floyd family includes $500,000 to improve the area around the intersection of 38th Street and Chicago Avenue, where George Floyd died in police custody, May of 2020. Thanks for joining us today. Get Washington Today as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and download the free C-SPAN Radio app to listen anywhere, anytime. Hope you have a good evening and weekend.